from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me today are the founders of Kawa Coffee, Raphael and Sarah Perrier. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
So we're going to go way back. We're going to figure out how this whole Kawa thing started and how we got to where we are today with many locations and many beans sold. So, let's go back to first, you weren't, Raphael, born in the States. And you were in Canada?
Yes, originally from Canada.
So yeah. Let's talk about how we found our way to the States first, just from the very beginning.
So I was born in Canada. When I was 5, we moved to the U.S. And my father actually was in business with his brother. They were developer, contractor. And it's 1981, I think, when we got here. And, there was a boom going on in growth of St. Pete at that time. And so we moved down here to be part of that. That's why we came to the area.
The other St. Pete boom back in 1981.
The old one.
And so a little foreshadowing then that decision is really what played into you both ending up here now is being anchored back by that.
Yep. And so I grew up here. I went to school. And then when I went off to college, I went up to Philadelphia. My background is in the arts. I was a dancer, ballet, modern contemporary. So I stayed up in Philadelphia. And that is where Raphael and I met. He used to come to a lot of dance shows back then.
No.
He came to every show and gave me some flowers.
Yeah. He came to every show she was in.
Yeah, I did. Exactly. Yeah.
I bought a lot of flowers. A lot. I'm from France. I was born in the Alps, which is a terrible area to be from. We had a lot of fun over there. I moved in the US when I was 21, 1996. I came to study. I graduated from Temple University in Philadelphia. And after that, I graduated with a marketing degree, which was fun. And I didn't want to go into corporate, work into a corporation at all. A friend of mine from the school I was in worked in a coffee shop called La Colombe on 19th Street in Philadelphia, right on Return Square, and asked me, hey, do you want to work in a coffee shop? I said, yeah, sure.
And this is after you'd graduated or while you're still going? So you travel across the pond, you finish school, and you go work in a coffee shop.
Yes. My dad was going to kill me.
Was it a lifestyle choice? What was the impetus for that?
I don't know. I felt like, the corporate environment wasn't for me. And I enjoyed, I went twice to that coffee shop. It was a lot of fun. I saw people working there and really having fun. Making a lot of money. I was making a lot of money.
At the coffee shop?
Oh, my gosh. Like, I was making 80 grand a year. Wow. Yeah, it was busy. Yeah, it was busy. It was tips. And we got paid, I think, $6 an hour, not even, at the time.
So was it one of those deals where, I know there's a time when the bookstores were hot, where you'd have PhDs working in Barnes & Noble just because it was cool and that was the place to be. Was a little bit of that?
I think it was. Plus, again, once I was in it, I really enjoyed it. I love people. I love, connection. I met Sarah when she was there. She was a customer, fell in love, and and she gave me a hard time for 6 months,
I made him work for it.
That's not bad. 6 months.
It's a long time. Yeah. Every day.
Full-time job.
Yeah, I didn't even drink coffee before I met him. So then he broke me in slowly. I used to drink mocha, cafe mochas, and then, he would make a little heart on top, and then,
And that was the only heart you made, right?
Yeah.
Just for her.
Yeah, just for her. Yeah.
Just for her. That was part of my hesitation.
What do you mean hesitation?
So, and were you a regular at the coffee shop or did you become a regular for any reason?
I became a regular. Yeah. I mean, kind of, I would say I liked going to see him. I started liking coffee. The director, I was in a dance company there and the director is Israeli and he's, into the coffee shop scene. So if he wasn't in the dance studio or teaching or whatever rehearsal, he was at the coffee shop. So we would do a lot, meeting at the coffee shop, and he introduced us originally. And then I just became a regular.
Yeah, I was good fun with him. And one day it's like, Raph, I have a nice girl for you. You'll see, you gotta love her. And she walked in, I was like, wow, she's pretty cool. And she used to date a guy named Raphael.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you got lucky, you just shared a name preference.
It
doesn't matter, if you do anything, we do anything, it's just the same name.
Yeah.
Very smooth, right? And keep on going and try. And
so one word you've used 3 times so far is fun. France was fun, college was fun, and the coffee shop was fun. So is that, would you say that for both of you, that's an important facet of your life choices?
Yeah, I mean, I was a dancer and that was kind of my passion. And I think we both believe in just doing something that, like you said, is fun, gives you joy, and kind of you have a passion and you spend a lot of time at work. So we try to instill that in our kids too. Just find something you like to do, make it into a career, because otherwise would be not for us, I guess.
Yeah, you know, you have one life, so might as well enjoy it. Is it fun every day? No, but because, you know, and we take ourselves pretty seriously. We know we don't joke around all the time, but we try to at least smile or have fun once a day. You know, it's a part of what we've done. I'm kind of a, I guess, funny guy. I don't take things very seriously. I make a lot of jokes. So if you don't know me, you don't understand it.
Yeah.
Once you know, then you get it.
A lot of times, I spend a lot of time, he'll say something and people think he's serious and then everyone's looking and I'm like, ha, 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 yeah. I have to be the side. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, ha, ha. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a
you
joke.
You need to record something, yeah. Play it on your phone, the laugh track, you know, walk around.
That's pretty much my role.
But it's funny. I mean, I don't know. I always joke about things. You know, we love what we do. We love our life. I think we're lucky that we have a good life. And that's what we try to tell our kids. Look at the life you have. What we have, what we're lucky enough to have this, smile. There's nothing bad about anything going on for us. You know, we are lucky to.
Except Starbucks. No.
Oh, for me, it's funny.
Of course.
It's great. I mean, it's fantastic. The more you can take, the better it is, the more fun it is.
So you didn't want a corporate gig, mm-hmm. but you did grow in your role at the coffee shop to do mm-hmm. some more corporate elements, I would mm-hmm. say. So could you talk a little bit about that progression?
So I started as a cashier, then I became a barista. Then after that, I became the coffee shop manager. And then after I got kind of bored with the whole job after a couple of years, and I started doing some PR and advertising. And then the company saw that I was getting kind of off track from them. And then they offered me a job in the corporate structure that we had, which was at the time, the two owners, a secretary and another sales guy. So they brought me in to do sales. I did sales in Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, the whole area, tri-state area. And I learned the business that way. So I learned a lot of good things, being so close to the owners. And I learned a lot of things that we don't want to do now. So it was a great experience because it was working for a company that was small at the time, just like we were, and then just see the growth and the expansion, but being in contact with the owners all the time. It was a really fun experience. So it wasn't a corporate really deal, but it was...
Small business kind of on its way up, kind of growing.
It was good and bad. It was some amazing times. Really, really had some amazing time and had some terrible times.
And did you mind, you know, some people hate sales, some people don't mind sales.
I love sales.
Yeah, you love sales. And how important was it in your understanding of the business?
I mean, I think that, you know, it was my job. First, I was a sales guy for them. And then just, you know, my dad was a really, really good salesman. And I think I got that from him. And I just enjoy it. It's for me, it's natural. It's not even a job. So, you know, we always say, like right now, I'm going to Mexico on Monday. We have a 14 restaurant group that we just started. So we say that, you know, you can sell ice to an Eskimo. You're pretty good. I can sell coffee to a Mexican. It's not bad. It's not bad.
So you know, here, roast it, sell it back to them. And they love it.
I think it's fun, yeah.
And Sarah, this time you're in parallel. Where did the dancing go? What were you doing during this time?
So I was dancing in the company. I had some injuries and, you know, that happens. And at the same time, it was a smaller company that was just professional company that was just getting started. So we didn't get paid that much. So I was waitressing, so I knew the food business, you know, a little bit. But then I was having these injuries. So they offered me to become company manager. And I learned tour manager. We toured around the U.S. So I did learn how to run a nonprofit business. Basically, I was working with three brothers that running the company. It was a nonprofit, a school. So I kind of got that side of it. And I really liked that side as well. So I kind of, when I retired from my dance career, I had learned all that, you know, how to manage the books. When you can manage a nonprofit, it's not easy. There's never enough money. You're always trying, you know, you have to be really resourceful. You have to kind of, so that prepared me to start our own business and that side of it, all the things that go along with it on that side.
And so ultimately you ejected from La Colombe. Where were you two relationship-wise? Were you pretty entrenched by that point?
So the funny thing, and you know, it's a funny story that we told our kids, right? So I'm not happy where I'm at, you know, and then again, their fault, my fault, whatever it is, it's just, you know, life. I work a lot. I don't get paid much. My first salary, I was making $25,000 a year selling coffee.
Which is a third of what you're making just working in the shop
right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you imagine. So, I mean, it's right. And then I'm bringing $3.5 million in sales as a sales guy, no commission. And I'm like, geez. So it's fine. I love it. I keep on going, get a raise and stuff and that. And then at one point, it just gets too much. And I'm like, I told her, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to France. We're dating at the time.
We were living together for a couple of years.
And I'm like, I don't have a choice because I don't have, you know, I had my paper with them. I had an H-1 visa with them. So I had no choice then just leave unless
or
get married. Right? I mean, so she's like,
I didn't
want to
leave. So
she's like, you know, you're not leaving. So, you know, let's get married. We'll do it. I'm like, okay, but how? I'm like, we'll do it quick on the side. Just I get married. She was Canadian. So she had to become American as well before we get married. So, but she's like, if we do that, you promise me that you'll still propose to me on a knee with a ring. I said, sure, no problem. Done. So November 01, 2001, we got married. In the west side of West Philly, by a pastor who called me Rachel. Oh, geez. Whatever you need to do, it's fine. And then she, at the time, was American. I got a green card, and I gave my 2 weeks to La Colombe, and that was it. And we actually opened a bar nightclub after that.
Yeah, so you mentioned, and you've done that a couple times. You know, you've done that a little in St. Pete, and you know, you're talking about Mexico. So is this is an equal passion, the bar restaurant space to the coffee space? Seems like you started there and you keep coming back to there.
I don't know. I think I love it. Mm-hmm. But it's more of, I would say fun again, but it's more on a side gig. I think, you know, once the problem is once you own a bar club, it's difficult to not have one if you have the opportunity. It's a fun, fun business. I'm glad I'm out of it. You know, we kept the bar nightclub for 3 years. I think that if I still had it, I'd be dead.
it's a different lifestyle. Yeah, and we were, you know, in our early 20s and we were middle 20s, whatever that was. You know, it was fun.
A lot of money.
But after a few years, it was, you know, I think, I don't know.
So, yeah, let's talk about that. You know, you went out. And so as you had those conversations about what's next, you took care of some of the romantic logistics of paperwork. And then were you interested in, you said you had some food service stuff going on?
Yeah, I mean, I knew a little about it. I mean, you know, I was involved with the bar, you know, not too much, a little bit on the side. I was still dancing the company at that time and used to go hang out there on the weekends. And I think by that time, he knew everyone in town. He knew, you know, he between managing the coffee shop, that was, everyone went there. And then going into the wholesale, which is being in contact with all the restaurants in Philadelphia, in those kitchens and knowing all the people in the industry, opening a restaurant, I mean, a bar was, that's where everyone went. After they left the coffee shop or they left working at the restaurant, they all went there to hang out. So it was a lot of fun, you know. But I think, our lifestyles didn't really match up at that point. Like he would, you know, be getting home at whatever time
in the
middle of the night, early morning. And I'd be getting up at 8 or 9 to go to the dance studio and like go dance all day. So I'm like, okay, you know. But I mean, like I said, it was fun for a little while. And then it was kind of like, okay. Same thing, he got bored again, too. I think it was like, okay, that was fun for a year or two.
I don't think I got bored this time. This time I got tired. I got it's a lot on your body when you're there all the time. When you run the place at the same time that, you know, you're part of it. It comes Wednesday, like, okay, now Wednesday, and now it's Thursday, and now it's ladies' night, and now it's Friday, and it's Saturday, and then Sunday. What are you doing? And then it's a lot. It's a lot on your body. It's on yourself. You know, when you, I just met someone, funny thing, from Mexico. Those guys that I'm dealing with, they own 14 restaurants and they also own 7 nightclubs. But when I mean nightclubs, like Ibiza style, like huge nightclubs, the guy that I met told me at dinner, is like, I never drink in my clubs. And I'm like, oh,
that's smart.
That's very smart. That's
you should learn that
I wasn't
part.
Like that. So it's a fun business, and when you love it, it's even worse.
Same rule doesn't apply to coffee, though. You can have.
Oh,
that,
no,
you
know? No, we don't. We drink the coffee. It's a good thing.
And one thing we kind of jumped over, you then also got exposure to roasting in your role as well. So how deep did you get into the process? And obviously, you're understanding the import-export elements of it. Mm-hmm. You're getting the roasting elements, you know.
I mean, I worked with them on that side about 3 years, so you learn a lot. At the time, one of the owners was the roaster. Mm-hmm. The other owner was more on the accounting and business side, just, you know, like we started. So you see, you're in contact with them, you see what's going on, you learn. I was exposed to the roasting, I was exposed to the process, I was exposed to why I was in contact with the coffee buyers, the importer, the exporter, all those things. So it was a natural thing when we did it that just have all those contacts already.
So, you know, if you think of a restaurant, the chef is key and they have very unique recipes, but obviously a whole menu with endless kinds of food and combinations on it is a palate. How much of that sort of logic translates to the roaster? How much room is there? How unique is it? You know, how important is it to the business?
I mean, it's very important. Our roaster has been with us for 11 years now. We kind of put the base together. We created the blends, the main blends that we have. But our roaster keeps on working on creating, you know, like when we do the hope roast, when we do different roasts that we created over the years, is very important to creating that. It's important into making sure the quality of the coffee is the same, testing, cupping, all those things. Mm. You know, it's the same thing in the chef in the kitchen. You always look at what's going on, what's coming out. Quality control is key.
I would say one thing that's a little bit different, you know, you always come out with new ideas, but people want like a consistent product, which is, you know, there's all different, every season the beans are different. So we're trying to always recreate that kind of similar blend that kind of is our signature every time. So that's kind of fun where you get to take beans from different farms and try to fit them into our profile that we want them to kind of find which ingredients go to make the final product. But we believe that there's, you don't need too many choices either, that people just, it's different than food. They want to wake up and just have a good coffee every day and not have to think about choosing which kind of coffee necessarily. And, you know, so there's kind of room for both sides to that. But a lot of people just want the same consistent product every time.
Well, I mean, humans are very habitual, and I think coffee is a key cornerstone to that. And so the same experience over and over again is important.
Which can be boring.
Yeah, we always say it's a very boring business.
That's why we create stuff.
Yeah. When you think about it, it's the same cup of coffee, the same thing every day. You drink the same thing, I do the same thing, she drinks the same thing. So you try to make it fun, but it's not exciting. It's so the consistency is really the key of the coffee business.
It's just like the pilot going through the safety checks every time before they fly the plane that you're starting your day off with the coffee checks.
Yep.
So actually, I want to back up a sec. So at this point, the coffee shop, La Colombe, is vibrant, right? This was the first one. They've grown since then.
Yes, way grown.
Yeah, and there's a culture to it. So obviously, a big part of coffee is the experience wrapped around drinking the coffee, which you have a very unique one of in the way you style your restaurant. So in your conversations with the owners, you have the mechanics of import-export, you have the sales, you have the coffee itself. How much was brand and brand experience considered in that business?
I mean, it was key. When you look at La Colombe logo, I think, you know, it's very unique. The name itself is unique. I think they worked on it as much as they could. Now, when the level where I was at with them, which was early stage of the company, you don't put as much emphasis on the branding and the marketing, if you want, right away. You try to grow your company, just like we did with Kawa. You try to put your product out there. Coffee is very difficult to advertise and market on the screen, right? It looks pretty great, but the real marketing is it's tasting it. What makes the difference between a good coffee La Colombe and a not so good coffee, you know, the Green Giants? You know, it's so the key for us when we did, which I learned with them, is to do so many nonprofits, so many tastings, so many donations, so many, all those things that were part of what we did that I was doing with them, that just put the brand out there and people were like, wow, this is just a good cup of coffee. And that's how you grow your business on the coffee style.
We did we followed that when we moved here and started doing things, you know, to get out in the community and actually interact with people and get them to taste your product. And then you're also supporting great causes and, you know, people really appreciate that. So it was kind of that was just a great way that we found to get the brand out there in the beginning, especially. And we still continue to do it all the time now. But I mean, it's
all the time.
In the beginning, when you don't have like a huge marketing budget or, you know, you're trying to figure out how to get your name out there, it's what helped us a lot. And we really, like I said, got in part of the community, and then you can talk to people, come over to our coffee shop. And then, you know, on that side, having the coffee shop as like a window to the wholesale and kind of, so that really, that's how we started.
But you end up at, you know, ironically, loyalty, because you have, it's the mix of all of it. It's the mix of how prevalent you are in the community, the mix of the experience and the mix of the actual coffee itself.
Yep.
Yeah. So you want to eject from the lucrative nightclub that's killing you in Philadelphia.
So much money.
What was that? How do the conversations go from A, what do we do next, to B, where do we do it?
So I think the conversation was she actually told me enough is enough. And I think she was right. And then we wanted to start a family. Starting a family with a nightclub is not ideal. Philadelphia is a big city. It's not New York City, but it's a big city. And to be honest, we came here in St. Pete every year we came.
Yeah, to visit my family.
And visit a dad, a mom, and everybody around here. And every time I was opening that window and seeing that blue sky, and I'm like, what are we doing in Philly? Like, what are we doing up there? It's just every time we had to
take sunshine, you don't appreciate it when you're here all the time as much as you do when you're in Philadelphia and you come down.
we were depressed to leave and go back to Philly and take that flight and go back up there. And I'm like, I really won't live here. And, you know, when she said enough is enough, I'm like, oh.
I grew up here, and back at that time, it was a lot different than it is now. So I was like, what are we going to do there? I don't know. You know, downtown was, my dad always had his office downtown, but there really wasn't, you know, there was no downtown. There wasn't one restaurant on Beach Drive. There wasn't, you know, there was, my dad and his brother actually developed and built the Vinoy condos. So there was starting to be a little bit, but it was, Vinoy was a boarded up building when I left. So we kept on coming. And then finally I was like, okay, I think you're right. He had to convince me because I wasn't ready to move back. I was like, I don't know if I want to go back to St. Pete, but he brought me back here. And it's, I mean, I'm so happy that we came back. It's amazing.
You're welcome.
You're right. I guess I have to give you credit for that.
Even though your family is here.
I know, right?
And did you have, were you of the mindset, stick it out in Philly, or did you have other places you thought about going? Were you
like,
let's go to France,
sure.
please, or what?
I mean, I wouldn't mind going to France, but no. I don't know. I wasn't sure really. I mean, I liked being in the city, but like I said, we were trying to start a family, and I wasn't really, and we didn't have any support up there as far as family or, and I don't know, just kind of wanted different. And it, I really did the gray winters. After like the 10th, 11th winter, I was ready for some sunshine too. That kind of, and you could tell there was some stuff happening here. What year did we move back? You're good with the dates.
2005.
It was just kind of the start of something going on here, and we were actually moving back. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. He was supposed to do a restaurant and a bar, because I don't know.
So how did that, we're back here again. Sounds fun.
I know, it sounds fun. Exactly. It was going to be more restaurant this time, but still.
6 p.m.
Yeah, we came down, and I was going to get what became later Ceviche on the Ponce de Leon.
Oh, yeah.
I was competing with Ceviche after that with the Ponce de Leon owner, Savni. And it lasted 6 months, negotiated back and forth, back and forth. Played really well, really good golf. We came down with a little bit of money from the nightclub. So I played golf for 6 months, which was fantastic. And then after 6 months, my attorney, I won't name him, but went on vacation without saying anything. And when he came back from vacation, we lost the deal. Mm. So I was like, oh, okay. So thank you very much. He sent me the bill for the whole negotiation. So
and you were going for the upstairs and the downstairs?
Yeah. I was going to do a French restaurant upstairs, what Ceviche was, and then a bar, more like fun downstairs. So we lost the deal. Then we looked around and we say, you know what? There's no coffee company around. At the time, you had Geoffrey's and Indigo, I think. That's what it was. And there was nothing in St. Pete, really, except Duncan and a couple of Starbucks.
It was the Globe.
The Globe was, I remember with Joel.
They weren't a coffee roaster, but they were.
So we say, you know what? We know what we're doing on the coffee side. I know what I'm doing. Let's set up a wholesale coffee company and go from there.
And I was, at the time we moved down, I ended up getting pregnant. I was teaching dance and I was like doing a couple little things, trying to figure out what I was going to do. So I wasn't going to be involved in that restaurant. We weren't going to work together. That was our plan at all. Nope. But the coffee idea came up and then we ended up, I don't know, convinced me that I should join him.
I mean, when you run a nonprofit for what, 4 or 5 years, running a profit company should be pretty easy. And that's, you know, that's what happened. It's, you know, it's, I think when you have the experience of fighting every day of where you get money, how you support it, how you run it, how you keep it afloat, and you get into a company that doesn't make money right away, but will eventually do something. So that was my plan. It's like, you know, I think you have the experience to be able to run the company.
And I mean, obviously you did wholesale first and then the shop. So, you know, in those early stages, was it a pretty clear model from day one, or did you kind of go back and forth on some different paths to walk?
No, it's funny. I always tell the same story. We did a grand opening. Remember that?
Yes. In our warehouse on like...
on the south
Childs
side.
Park area. Yeah.
It was 45th and 8th Avenue South. That was our warehouse with bullet holes in the doors. And then we do a grand opening with maybe 10 bags of coffee and some plants and a table and chairs. And we invite the press, we invite everybody. Nobody shows up, right? Because who cares about Kawa? Except one guy, his name was Jeff Hook. And Jeff now is the marketing guy for the Columbia restaurant.
Okay. Group.
And he was with Tampa Tribune.
Tampa Tribune food guy at the time. So comes in, I show him this and that. And we sit down at the table and he's looking at me. And I'm like, yes. He's like, what are you doing? And I said, we're building the biggest coffee company in Tampa Bay. And he's looking at me like, okay. Like, you know, I'm kind of losing it. I'm like, no, I'm telling you, Jeff, you'll see. We're going to build the biggest coffee company in Tampa Bay. All right. And about, what, five years later, I see Jeff. He's like, do you remember that day you told me you did it? I'm like, yeah, I told you. So we always had a vision of where to go because I think the experience, the chance that I had with La Colombe and seeing it and on hands-on and really learning how to do it and what it could be gave us, I think, a great ramp to where we are now.
And I think Raphael's always had the vision and I follow along with his vision, I guess. So, I mean, he always has a big vision and had, like you said, since day one. I didn't know the coffee business and I think I was less confident in the beginning, maybe just because I had never had my own really, I mean, I was involved with a bar, but not really. I was never been in the coffee business. But I mean, as we went along, I understood his vision and I get it now.
Just recently, a couple of months ago?
Okay, I guess.
No, I think we work well together because I always want to go somewhere and I don't care how we're going to do it. And she's always tells me no.
I'm like, okay, so hold on. How are we going to?
How are we going to get
there?
Don't
worry about it. We're going to do it anyway.
I'm like, okay, we'll do it.
But it works.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to get into working together, but I want to go back because the name, the branding. Yes. So where did the name originate from?
So the name means coffee. That's the original name for coffee. It's from Ethiopia. So coffee was discovered in Ethiopia in Africa, in the Kaffa region, K-A-F-F-A. And from Kaffa, it became Kawa. Kawa everywhere in the world. So you say Kawa in the world, people say coffee, except in America. The real way, the reason why we call it Kawa is because in France, you say, let's have a Kawa. It's like, let's have a cup of Joe. Mm-hmm. It's a slang for a cup of coffee. And we thought that was cool. A couple of maybe drinks involved one night. Say, hey, why don't we do this? And it's like, oh, that sounds cool. That sounds great. And
That's how it came. And I mean, I have to give him credit for that because I know. It's terrible. It's terrible.
What, having a couple of drinks? You don't get credit for that. No,
for the idea.
For the idea. But yeah, that's where the name came from. And like you said, everywhere you talk to Europeans, you talk to everyone from different countries, they understand that name when they come. And so they always, it's very interesting to them but in the US, no one really knows that history of the word and of coffee in general. So, but I think it's a great, great name. And it always is a cool story behind it that you get to tell to people, catches their interest. But like I said, and if anyone has any European or background from out of the country, they always know what it is already, so.
And then you have the name, right? You need to create a logo. Mm-hmm. So if you go to the shop, the Fifth and Second Avenue, the first one, the OG, you have that logo on the windows.
It's painted on the windows.
Yeah. Just painted and really painted by an artist and all that stuff. It's the only shop left that has that logo because the original one, we designed that logo by hand. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was just, you know,
we actually found
it.
The other day, we found a paper at our house that had like the original printed that I don't know if we were drawing or out on the piece of paper.
Let's keep that. That'll go in the Kawa Museum someday.
That's what I say. I have a ton of stuff in the museum. At the office, you should see I have a bunch of stuff.
And the colors. So we ordered our roaster and there's different colors you could choose from. And the colors that our roaster are, if you come to our roastery now, we have two of them, but they're yellow and brown. And that's where we got the colors because that's from the original roaster that we just love those colors. And we thought that was, the yellow is so warm and then the brown coffee and, you know.
Makes sense.
Yep.
And how did you choose where, you know, your blend philosophy and where you're going to get your beans from? How did that decision process go?
I mean, that was some testing that we did once we got the roaster. We had an idea of what coffee could do and where we wanted to go with it. And then we just started slowly put stuff together and create something that
trying different things, putting them together. We liked the blending process, you know, and it was 17 years ago. And coffee industry has changed a lot since then. They go through they have all the waves. We were kind of the third wave after that came later is more focused on the individual beans. And for us, it was more about the complete blend and having the balance and the body and the acidity and kind of, you know, that's kind of where we came from. And a very traditional, our espresso is a very traditional Italian type of espresso. At the time, there was a lot of like the Starbucks was the big, like the really dark over roasted, you know, kind of, that was what everyone was doing, but we decided to go more with the traditional Italian style, which is what we loved, personal taste, but we feel like it's a great blend. That's my favorite blend, our Mistral espresso blend still.
Yeah, so and when you're doing this process, what's your target? You know, do you say we need a light, what sort of the check boxes you have to give for a full suite of offerings?
So the idea, right, is that you know when you mix coffee, most of our blends have four different coffees in them, okay? So your Brazil is your body, your Mexican is your Colombian, Mexican is your acidity, your Guatemalan is your sweetness, your Costa Rican is your sweetness. So you have every coffee has a real characteristic to it. So you try to do a percentage and a balance of them to create at the end that cup. We're trying to have something that has a good body to it, but it's not acidic, but still a little touch of acidity and then some sweetness behind to try to stay in your palate for a long time. And that's what I think what we created. It's something that goes well as an espresso single or can also go well with milk. You need the strength, but you also want the sweetness. So it's, you know, balancing all that.
And so going back to that consistency element, if you get a blend that is lightly acidic, just, you know, as you use that, then is it important for you as you go through different flavors and, you know, different release, different types, that you stick with light acidity? People expect consistency that way as well. So that sort of now defines, even if you, you have variations, you stick around that.
Stick with the blend taste. You really, when you're known for something like we are now, for the drape, the espresso, everything coffee we have, you stick to it. As long as you change something, it's bad. Yeah, it's
we don't,
you
know, like
again,
change.
It's you, there's one thing you don't change, it's people's coffee. It's very weird. You know, it's, you can experience beers, you can experience coffee, we just don't want to experience.
It goes along with our, like in our shops, you know, our baristas, they know someone comes, they see them coming, they just put, they don't have to say what they want, they don't have to talk even in the morning, they just put up their, you know, they want their two Splendas, two shots, oat milk, whatever, you know, they know exactly, no one really varies in what they get. For the most part, everyone just wants you to give them exactly the same every time. So
habit. Yep.
And they all could be different. There's so many different ways you can prepare your coffee, but it's very specific to people, what they, how they like it.
And here you have another little layer of branding as well, because you have to name your blends. Mm-hmm. What was that process? Was that another couple drinks or what were we?
Yes, it's always I mean, you know,
of course.
You know, you try to create things and, you know, you talk about it for a whole day and you don't have anything coming and like, oh, having a couple of drinks. Like, oh, hold on, wait. Oh, I'm thinking. So what about we call them after name, after wins?
Oh, yeah.
So we named every single blend that we have, the five blends that we have, after winds. So the strength of the wind is the strength of the coffee. Mm. So the stronger coffee we have is Sirocco, which is one of the strongest winds in the world, in Africa. Then you have the Mistral, which is the medium roast espresso. It's a good, strong wind from south of France. Then you have the Boreas. The Boreas is a very light coffee that we have. The Boreas is a light breeze from South America. And then you have the Zonda. The Zonda is a very, very, very thin wind from ancient Greece that doesn't exist anymore, and that's the decaf. So every blend is according to the strength of the coffee, strength of the wind.
That was fun.
A lot of drinks.
That was fun. Okay, so you've now had your, you know, your grand opening that one person attended.
Yeah.
And I have to say they got the scoop, right?
Yeah.
Just a joke. So what comes next? You out and you're hustling now. You're selling.
Yep. We're trying.
So, yeah,
trying.
I was roasting the coffee in the warehouse, okay, and packaging
not,
it.
Not so much. You were the OG roaster.
Yeah.
Yes, but she's not roasting much because...
I wasn't roasting much, you know. Grinding us all, making a bag over here.
How many cups you drink there,
oh,
right?
Make an invoice, answer the phone. There's no one calling. But okay. I was also, at the same time, our oldest daughter was born.
Yes.
Around the same time, the first week that we got our first wholesale customer, which was the Garden.
Central Cafe.
Yeah. So they're right next door, next to the Garden. Central Cafe and Organics, and then the Garden was like number two. We got them about the same week our daughter was born. So she used to come to the roastery and in the stroller, and it makes a lot of white noise. It's amazing, and it puts the kids to sleep, in case
that's,
you know, in the stroller. And then he was out there hustling, knocking on doors.
Hustling. Yeah, I found that South African guy over there on Central, super nice guy. Stop talking to him. It's like, well, what you do? What you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I have a coffee company. He's like, oh, coffee? What? I tried a coffee with him. He's like, that's pretty good. Okay. He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll try. Like, so that was our first customer.
Take his 5-pound bag.
He gave us a shot. Yeah, 5-pound bag at a time. He's like delivering 5-pound bag. And he's next to, at the time, the Garden at Redwoods, owned by Emmanuel and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
So Redwoods.
They shared a kitchen, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Emmanuel, and so Redwoods and the Garden, where that was our first group.
As a customer.
We own Central Avenue. Yeah.
There's two of them.
We own all the Central Avenue coffee.
Exactly. And the next thing you know, I'm trying to get ceviche, which I didn't get as
that's bar. The least they could do for you, right?
Right?
Yeah.
So then I get, at the time it was Gordon Davis.
Yeah.
That was the owner. Wilco was in there as a manager. I mean, we're talking like, geez. Like 17 years ago. So that's another group that we're getting, because ceviche was, I think, three at a time. It was one in Tampa, St. Pete, and Sarasota, maybe. And then we opened Orlando after that. But that's how we started. But then we still got to the point where it wasn't growing, wasn't going anywhere. So, because I think it's very difficult for people to trust a brand. You open a restaurant, people will come and see and figure it out. And it's part of the fun of discovering something. Trusting a brand that's starting out, you don't know if they're going to be here tomorrow. You don't know if they're going to survive. You don't know if it's going to be quality, consistent. All those questions that you need time to prove that. So you prove that with time, or you prove that with name recognition, right? So after maybe a couple of months, I'm like, I can't get a customer. I need something. So I called a friend of mine called Nicholas, who was the GM at a French laundry at the time in California. So I called
Thomas
Nico.
Thomas Keller.
Yes. I called Nico. I'm like, hey, I need help. He's like, what's up? I'm like, we opened Kawa. I can't get a customer. I need something. He's like, all right. He's like, call this number. I say, okay. I'm like, who? Just call the number. I say, okay, call the number. So I call the number. I'm like, hi. Oh, yes, yes, in French. Yes, I was expecting your call. Nicola told me you're coming. When can you come see me? I say, I don't know.
You busy right now?
Well, where are you, first of all?
Tomorrow.
I'll be there in 5 minutes.
So that was the French pavilion in Epcot.
Oh.
Yes. Ah. Right?
Okay, I know where this is going.
Yes.
That's so, a good phone call.
Great phone call. So I'm like, okay. And like, yeah, okay, so come tomorrow and your name will be at the gate to come in. Just come in and come show me what you have. I say, okay. And I'm like, who is this? Oh, this is Jérôme. I say, okay, Jérôme. So I hang up the phone. I'm like, Jérôme. So that was Jérôme Bocuse, which was the son of Paul Bocuse. So the day after, I put my suit on, tie and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, going there. I go, we walk in Epcot. I don't know if you've ever been in the back of Epcot. It's like walking to the White House almost. Mm. It's like the security is like gates everywhere. I mean, and I'm like, oh my gosh, where am I going? So finally I get there and I look at the machine that they have. I set up the espresso, all that stuff. Jérôme walks in. He's like, hi, I'm Jérôme. Okay, nice to meet you. Sits down. Okay, make me a coffee. I make him a cappuccino. And then, so tell me about the company. So I explain him, you know, Kawa, St. Pete, blah, 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 my experience, all those things. And then Jérôme is drinking the coffee and he's finishing with a spoon. Mm. And I'm like, ooh, that's a good sign, mm-hmm. man. So I'm like, explain the whole thing. And then he looks at me, he's like, yeah, so when can we switch everything? Mm. And I say, you mean the whole restaurant? He's like, yeah, switch everything. When can you do it? I don't know, 2 weeks. It's like, all right, make it happen. And I was like, okay, all right, cool. So I leave, I call her. She's like, how'd it go? I'm like, pretty bad. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah, we'll switch everything in 2 weeks. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah, we got the account. She's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. So when we got that account, it was for us putting a stamp into the mm-hmm. brand. It was, you know, the best chef in the world, Paul Bocuse, his son, Jérôme, giving us the approval of the product that, you know, someone like him, like them, as a company would serve. And it's just starting Kawa on wholesale. And just then you go to different areas and different restaurants and you say you serve coffee for Paul Bocuse. It opens a lot
like,
of doors.
Huh? Oh, they open the door for you.
And that
change
was,
your pitch.
That was a fantastic experience because she used to roast the coffee. I used to deliver the coffee. So every Wednesday I was going to Epcot.
Yeah, that's great.
I was going around 10 o'clock in the morning.
Car full of coffee.
Car full of coffee. Loading everything, doing everything, looking at the machine, all that stuff. And 11:30, Jérôme was like, do you want to have lunch? I was like, sure. So I had lunch pretty much every...
Oh, Paul Bocuse is here this week.
Yeah, my dad is here. Bad stories.
All these different chefs, they're always sitting around the table with them and I'm roasting coffee. I'm like, okay, sounds
like that. The lunch, but not the menu lunch. Was.
You can have more than one person deliver coffee, you know. You could have two people sometimes.
No. That was my gig. But I mean,
I've eaten there now, you know, many times in it. I mean, yeah, but not the same experience when you're eating with them or sitting around the table having lunch, you know, with all the chefs and stuff. I mean, it's pretty
Paul
cool.
Paul Bocuse right there and his son and then Jean Blanchet and all those guys. I was just hearing the stories of them going to Canada on snowmobile and being stuck in the middle of the night and starting fire to cook. And I mean, it was unreal. It was fantastic.
You know, so playing what if a little, had that call not happened, you know, had they not answered, were you at a spot where you're thinking about changing direction or were you still had good hope at that point?
No, we don't change. We'd have done something different.
I think, you
we'd
know,
have keep on pushing.
Yeah. And after that, you know, we wanted to open a coffee shop as well. And we didn't, mm-hmm. in the beginning, we were, you know, we first started, we were thinking, well, maybe a coffee shop and roast inside. We never found the right spot. That's when we decided to do the roasting. Like, let's focus on the roasting wholesale first. But after 2 years, we got the opportunity to do a spot to have a shop, and we thought it was a good spot. I don't know, people thought we were crazy on Fifth Avenue, but my dad actually was a contract. He built that building, 475 condo building. It's what, six stories or, you know, a little mm-hmm. condo building there. And there was one retail spot in the bottom, and we decided to open there. And once we opened that, that really was also like a second wind because that was the window, like we said, window to our brand. You know, it's kind of abstract. Here's my coffee in a bag. And, you know, you have experience of that. But going there, and we can kind of have the full experience of serving people and the whole customer service set, just enhance the brand. And then, you know, when you have someone, okay, come to our shop and try our coffee from all these different restaurants and give different experience you can have there that kind of really boosted the wholesale as well.
Yeah, so let's dig into that a little bit because you know, it seems like a lot of work for a little bit of brand growth because you have to staff it and you have to operate it. So when you were thinking about, you know, on one hand, it seems natural. A lot of people that roast then open their own places because it gives them a distribution outlet for it at the retail level. What was the mix of this is just a quality of life thing that we want to do because we have a passion for it versus, you know, we actually can measure an ROI for doing it, all our ROI?
No, at all, no. To be honest, we did it for ourselves.
We used to have
coffee during the week
out.
At the office.
Yeah.
And we had no place to have coffee on the weekends. And it drove us crazy. And when we got the chance through a dad who had the spot at the corner to rent it from him, we say, you know what, it's a perfect opportunity, let's do it. And that was a selfish move from us to just have coffee on the weekends. It was challenging because we worked at the shop and we worked at the office at the same time. So we had to run both and to shift and stuff like that. But I mean, it was the right opportunity, but it was a very selfish thing. It was just for us to have coffee on the weekends. And we wanted good croissant too. So.
And I think, you know, it was kind of an extension of, like we said, we like to be in the community and kind of be part of it. And that was what we had envisioned was kind of like the coffee shop in La Colombe where, you know, you have the artists, you have business people, you have students, you have kind of every walk of life and they all kind of mingle together. It's kind of a European feel to it that happens in Europe that at that time wasn't really, there was Starbucks, but there wasn't really that kind of feel, especially in St. Pete area. There was nowhere like that. I think really, like I said, maybe the Globe, but they were more of like, you know, nighttime coffee shop vibe than we were doing. But I mean, and so we were kind of hoping that we could recreate that in St. Pete and we thought we could do it. People thought we painted that store by ourselves. We did, you know, we were in there and there was like homeless people. That's about all there was on that street walking by. You know, there was, you know, at that time. And sometimes we'd be like, what are we doing? But yeah.
So, you know, at this point, you've grown a lot since then, but there's always that sort of line I think people have between corporate coffee and local coffee. And that plays out in how you style your restaurants. You know, you have the more uneven tile. It's, you know, everyone's a little different, but you're also growing and you're not going to say no to a large corporate account if you can get it. So what's your sort of awareness level of not crossing that line from local coffee to corporate coffee? And is it a line or is it, how do you think about that?
No, I don't think it's a line. I think it's a matter of keeping the view out there for on the shop level to get to show that always that local feel without being too mom and pop. It's trying to, you know, our competition, you know, is Starbucks. You know, we don't really compete with local coffee companies. We don't compete with local shops. We really go after the Starbucks crowd. And I think the way we're doing it is by showing them that we have the means to be able to be at the same level, but more on the locally side, if that makes sense. For us, is to try to keep our roots the same. We truly believe, like you said, that it's not all about the coffee. It's about experience. It's about the service. It's about everything that we created that's different from, I think, the local companies right now. We try to be a little more corporate without having that corporate feel.
Yeah, and I think consistency is a big thing. At one point, we were growing and we realized that consistency maybe wasn't there in all our stores. So you really have to, like, even though we don't want to be corporate, you have to have that on the side of training, on the side of, you know what I mean, to make everything consistent. But you also want to have that, like you're saying, that community feel and that local feel in the shops themselves. And it kind of goes along with first, I mean, getting in your branding, you kind of just have to, your social media and all that stuff, you know, just keep that in mind and kind of put that out there so that people get that feeling as well as actually in the shops being involved in the communities that we're in. It's kind of an extension, you know, we started franchising recently and part of the, we think that it's kind of an extended into the franchising because we really want to people be our franchisees that are involved in their own community. So it becomes a community store, but more than if we opened one somewhere in Orlando, it wouldn't really, we're not in Orlando, but if we have a partner there and they're doing the store and they're in Orlando, then it becomes part of the, you know, a bit right. A representation of our brand
sure.
Because they're going to be, have that feel in there if they're involved in their community in the same way. So that's kind of how we kind of see that as we've thought about corporate growing and we just feel like this is the right step for us. And to kind of, it also stays true to the, our values of like, being involved in the communities, but you have to kind of be in the communities to be involved in the communities.
So you started the first shop for yourself, and now you have over 10, 11, 14. Mm-hmm. So are those all for yourself as well, or did you find a good model there? And how much has that become a part of the profitability and the business plan?
I mean, we're making money on the shops. If we don't, then we shut them down. It's as simple as that. It's a good business for us, but the wholesale behind is a big part of the company. And it's something that sometimes the people don't see because of the shops and so much presence in the streets, that we have a whole wholesale business that's pretty big, actually. We, you know, we do wholesale from Tampa Bay area down to Miami, to Utah, Boston, the Caribbean, Turks and Caicos, Mexico. I mean, we growing that side of the business as well. We have 125 Publix cafe across the Southeast. We know we have a lot of things going on. Now, I think the brand is really cafe, coffee shops that we own, because we have, you know, it's in the street, so it's an easier thing for people to get in mind. But
I think also, like, we were focused on the wholesale. We opened the first shop, like you said, we opened a second shop, and then we, you know, there was a crisis of the coffee market went crazy. And again, you have to tell me what year, because you know I'm not good with dates.
2008.
2008?
No, 2009. We opened 8, it was 2009.
And where coffee went up, like, I mean, crazy.
From 90 cents to $3.95 a pound.
For like the base price of coffee. And then, you know, when you're selling coffee, I don't know, $6, $7, $8, $9 a pound on wholesale, you can't add that price. You know, it's hard to increase costs to make it on the wholesale side. But in the cafes, you know, you raise prices 10 cents a drink and it covers your costs. And we kind of saw that. It's kind of a balance of being able to absorb different, into different, you know, kind of diversifying what we're doing between wholesale and the stores made a lot of sense. And that's when we decided to push more into the retail at that point. And now we're kind of a balance, I think, of both. But, you know, the same thing during the pandemic, it was good to have other things than stores because, you know, we had the e-commerce and we had stuff like that, you know, you kind of, we have that diversified kind of base, which has been helpful in keeping us for 17 years, kind of leaning on whatever different channels that we can in the coffee business. So,
17 years working together. And then, you know, small businesses are not easy. When you don't get invited to Epcot, it can cause
tension.
Tension. And obviously a family in there as well. So how's that journey been? I mean, obviously I can only imagine it's had ups and downs, but here you are.
Again, it's been fun. You know, we always said if it's not fun anymore, then we won't do it. I'm lucky to work with her. And I think, you know, she's not out of luck working with me. We complete each other pretty well. It's the key of working together. It's be able to do different things and still work together. The advantage is I trust her 100%. I think she trusts me 100%.
That's a big advantage.
It's a huge advantage. We don't need to sit down for meetings. We just drive with the kids on vacation and talk about business, which drives them crazy. But
they're like, can we please stop talking about coffee now? We're like, okay, 5 more minutes, we promise.
So the downside, I would say, is we don't stop talking about it. But like we said, also, when you're married and your wife comes home or your husband comes home from work, you talk about work.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, you vent to your husband. So we do the same thing exactly, except that we are able to, I think, to be more productive about things that we say. I think we complete each other very well.
Yeah, I think there's always, like I said, we trust each other. And when you have, I don't know, one time, you know, you're like, I don't know, what are we doing? And then you have the other one to pull you back up. We're pretty good at balancing each other in that way. So if one of us is down, we kind of pick the other one up. And we've been lucky that we have that good relationship where we don't always agree on things. Mm-hmm. I would say a lot of times we don't agree on things, but, you know, people
are... I'm always right.
And he thinks he's always right, so that's great. Okay, you're right. Okay, never mind. Don't listen to him. No, but I think, you know, we have a kind of a different dynamic, I would say, for people working for us sometimes when they get to know us, because we can be like, you know, it's kind of like your kids. You argue sometimes, but they know we will usually come to a conclusion. And I think that, you know, like you said, we don't really do the same things in the business. I think it's a little bit tough. I mean, the pandemic was a tough time. And I think we kind of condensed everything down. So it was like very intense and we had to work a lot more together on a lot of things. And we're trying to break away from that. I feel like go back to doing our own different things because it's like too much, too many, you know, and we trust each other's decisions, but it just got to be too many things where we don't really need to both be involved in everything. And so we're kind of going back to that a little bit, which is good.
I drive her crazy.
And I drive him crazy. So. But in the day, we still get along. We like to travel and that's one of our big passions, is like to get away. We like to go to France to visit. And the time difference is amazing because half the day, no one's even awake here. So you have, you know, you don't get any phone calls. Like when you go on vacation here, you're still getting all those, but that we found that's very helpful. Get in a different time zone. That way they can't bother you all the time. So
All right. Well, it's been wonderful to hear the story. I'd like to talk a little bit about what's next. You mentioned franchising, continued growth. You know, what's sort of the next year or two look like for you, for Kawa?
I mean, I tried to convince her 5 years ago to franchise. She nixed the idea and that was it. So I said, okay, fine. So about 6 months ago, we agreed that it was the right time to do it. We put the company as a franchisable company. We're starting selling franchise in October. The idea was to sell 5 franchises the first year and see where we're going from there. We sold 13 so far, and I'm trying to slow it down because it's just selling like hotcakes. It's crazy. But that's where we are right now. It's a different business. It's a fun thing to do because we are still involved in the development stage, but we won't run the business itself. So that's a good expansion for us. The wholesale is booming. We are right and left and right. It's usually slows down. It hasn't slowed down yet. So I don't know if it's going to keep on going or not, but I mean, it's pretty amazing. And then we're working right now on the e-com and the Amazon side that we pushed a lot during the pandemic. And then we slowed it down about a year and a half ago when things came back to almost normal.
Yeah, I think, I mean, on the franchising side, it's going to be a whole new business for us. So we're trying to get all new systems that we can support all the franchisees and make sure that they're successful. And so that's kind of going to be my focus. I think it's getting that. And then some other, you know, upgrade in the cafes themselves, like how can we make things better? We've been around for a long time. So it's how do we go to the next generation? Today, I was looking up stuff about AI and how that they're using ordering for like drive-through AI, you know, like that. Because, you know, like I said, there's no one really wants to stand there and take someone's order either. You know what I mean? That way you're just focused on making the drinks and then someone can, you know, so different stuff like that, that we can to make us move forward on that side in the cafe environment and see where we can go.
And long-term, is this a generational business or is there an exit potentially in the future?
I don't know. I mean, we have 2 kids. Both of them are telling us no. So that's pretty simple.
One that wants to go into science and one that is in musical theater. So they're like, nah, coffee, not interested. So we'll see though.
I think that the long term for us is to get to a level where we work a little bit differently. We have a good team right now and we want to grow with that team and put people in place that, you know, slowly grow with us and work at a different level. But like she said, going to Europe for a month right now is great. If we can do 2 or 3 months, even better. So I think, you know, it's really... We enjoy running the business. I personally get bored if we don't do anything. Like the day-to-day, it's great, but it's not my thing. I really love growing and developing businesses. Coffee is one of them. Could be something else. But I think that we want to get to a stage and a level where we enjoy, but it's not as intense on the day-to-day, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Really great hearing the story. And I've certainly enjoyed my fair share and spent many hours parked in Second Avenue North. So
thank you so
good
much.
To know what I'm getting
yes.
into.
So,
thank you.
So Sarah and Raphael.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
From stpcatalyst.com.